You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What it is, what's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels Anything Goes. It is another episode where we're just talking everything in and around wrestling. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that theme sounded like it was a few BPM shorter, like slower than normal. I don't know if it really was or if my brain is moving slower at this time of the morning. Either way, that's why I have my beloved co-host and all-round nice man, Alex Castillo from Violence and Violence on deck. What's up, my man?
What's up? At it again.
At it again. Back at it. Back at it again. And then speaking of back at it again, a guest that I just had over on the Faces and Feels interview section of the channel, it is the one and only, the man with the most stones in wrestling. It's Ruthless Pro Wrestling's Peapod. What is up, dude?
Hi again.
Hello. How exciting. We've taken you out of the interview format and we've dropped you in some kind of loose review format for a show that I've Googled. That's right, Forbidden Door 2024. I had to remember what we were even doing today. I did that as a bit, but I shoot didn't remember when we got on the call. That's how this morning is going. So, but hey,
it's gonna be a wild ride already.
It is gonna be a wild ride. Will Rafe be asleep before the end of the episode? That's the question. It was a big week, same, guys. Yeah. Like, you ever have one of those weeks where it's just like, we just fucking have something on every night? Like, you know you're a 40-year-old man when this is the case, but like, it's like there's a dinner and then there's like an after-work drinks and then there's a thing and blah, blah, blah. And you just like, you get to the end of the week and you're like, we went out every single fucking night of this week. You know what I mean? My body is just completely done with it. That's sort of where I'm at physically.
I've really learned that I needed a day off. Like a proper day, like I have to rejuvenate, I have to refresh, I have to not do anything because if I do too much, like it'll drag me throughout the week and then I'll just be exhausted.
Yeah.
And then I'll just be grumpy the entire time. So like I need that proper day not doing anything off.
Yeah. Absolutely. So to just like physically do nothing, right? And that's what we were talking about before, right, where I'm like it fitting shit into my life. I'm like, because I just need a reset. But talk about not doing shit, that's what Alex did today. He had that day today because this motherfucker's like, yeah, I was at the casino and I realized I really ain't doing shit today. And I was like, who's just going to the casino during the day? Like, what the fuck have you been up to, man?
I was on the clock too. It was great.
What do you mean you were on the clock?
I do something for work at the casino. But I hung out there for a little bit of extra time today, I'll say that much.
That rules. That rules.
What the fuck?
I literally like go into my office. Yeah. I literally go into my office and I just go, I don't want to be here. And I tell that to like the person that I just hired maybe about 3 weeks ago. And I just straight up go, I don't want to be here.
Setting a great example.
That's what happens when a tired millennial is a boss and like a head of a department. Yeah. You just like really just go, I don't want to be here. Do you want to leave early? Just fuck all. So I get it.
Nice.
Just setting a great example. To be fair, I do in my new role, I kind of write my own schedule a bit. You know, I have hours within how I work, you know, and that I need to complete. But, you know, if I need to kind of clock off a little bit earlier, I can start a bit earlier. And, you know, there's a bit of massaging room there. But at the end of the day, nothing just beats like I wake up and I lay on the couch until fucking midnight and then repeat. Like, that's what I want out of my weekend. That is it. Well, anyway, we're going to talk wrestling. That's going to bring us back. It always does. It always starts like this where I'm like, oh, I'm going to be back doing this. And then by the end, I have a really good time. So
yeah,
that is the plan. So we're talking about Forbidden Door. Alex and I did a preview with our good bud Chris Sherman that came out after the show. good planning me, but who gives a fuck? It's funny to listen back and listen to all the shit we got wrong, so that's totally fine. But I can't remember even what we said. Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do, let's just run through the card and just give our takes. We're just going to vibe out. We're not going to go into super details or anything like that. We're just going to say how we feel about it, and then maybe also lean into, like, Wrestle Dynasty, which obviously nothing's announced, but New Japan are going to be doing their own Forbidden Door-esque show the night after Wrestle Kingdom in the Dome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I've got some thoughts about how that might play out with the booking versus how this one did and things like that. So rewinding all the way back to the start of the show, I'm not going to go into Zero Hour stuff because I have not seen it. I do want to watch it, but, like, because we can't watch everything live here, you know, it's 5:30, 6 p.m. by the time we turn on the show, and then it runs for like 4 hours. Like, if you watch 0 Hour as well, it's like, forget about being alive, right? So
I will say that, like, they threw on a match during 0 Hour that was just a random squash match for some reason.
Just fit it in.
Like, let's give Kyle Fletcher a freaking payday. And then have him squash Serpentico. And I was getting snacks during that time.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, I missed the whole match. And then I also had to go to the bathroom during Soraya versus Mariah May, which sucked because I love Mariah May. I adore her.
Yeah.
I think she's fantastic. But, like, I had to, like, because I really, like, I ate before, and then I was, like, going to my friend's place, and, like, it just kind of hit me during that match. I was just like, oh, well, I'm going to miss this match. And I'm glad, because I didn't think I missed anything. And I'm sure Mariah May carried throughout the whole match.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's about it. The rest of the matches were fun.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm sure they were really good. Like, Gabe Kidd is probably one of my favorite wrestlers going right now. But I'm like, I'm sorry, homie, I can't watch this now. Like, I'll watch it later. I'll check out what he did. But, like, yeah, exactly. So jumping into the main.
He's a menace.
He is a menace. And fucking the fact he was on the pre-show and not the main card is a totally different conversation. But. What do we got? So first up was MJF defeating Haitian Cero. Is that how we say it? Haitian Cero?
Haitian Cero,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. What did you guys think of that? I hadn't seen Haitian Cero before. I thought he presented really cool, but it was not surprising in that it was like, you know, MJF is back and he's a win. I kind of thought it didn't really even need to be on the card, to be honest, but, you know.
I think it was one of those matches that, like, we have to involve MJF. But I thought, like, he would take on, like, somebody from New Japan, because, like, he's talked about in the past about, like, insulting New Japan and everything. Yeah. And he ends up taking, like, the CMLL person.
Yeah.
And which is nothing wrong. Hedgesero has been doing really well, like, on television and leading up to to the pay-per-view. And I think he's very unique and very fun and making, like, a technical wrestler, like, more enjoyable. Yeah. Like, he's a charismatic. He's like a Zack Sabre Jr. in a sense. And, like, they had a great technical wrestling match in Mexico, mm-hmm. like, days after the pay-per-view.
That's cool.
And I thought it was, like, a fun match. And I love, like, Clash of Styles matches.
Yeah.
Between MJS, like, and MJF coming back and looking like $1 million against Hedgesero. And, like, even past, like, recently on Dynamite, he's just, like, full on basically asshole again.
Yeah.
Which he needs to be.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed this whole pay-per-view at all. I love like, much like comic books have, like, a multiverse stories and everything, or, like, all Elseworld tales. I always love those stories. So I always love, like, big crossover stuff. And that's
like, just
why
what ifs and I things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is, like, the opportunity. Like, I'll never in a million years, like, play this. And, like, I know it's very, like, GM mode, like, especially this pay-per-view AEW sometimes as a whole feels like a big old GM mode.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't care.
It kind of is.
Fucking, yeah. It kind of is, but it, like, it's just fun. And yeah. I loved it. And I thought this was, like, a fun start for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It didn't really need to be part of the pay-per-view, but it, like, it's not hurting anything.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, people in the audience would have just been happy to see MJF, right? At, like, the end of the day,
exactly.
Like, he's been away and they want to see him. That's actually a good point. You just gave a good overview, and maybe we should actually just quickly touch on that before we go to the next match. Alex, what was your sort of overview vibe after watching the show? Like, how were you feeling? Were you thinking, like, that was a good show? I'm glad I checked that out.
Oh, no, I love the show. It was one of my favorites that I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was honestly shocked that it kept me awake because I was dead tired that night. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to stay up for this whole thing.
Yeah.
I did. I made it through the whole thing. So,
oh, same.
That says
same.
Something.
Yeah.
I, whatever the last pay-per-view was it was it Double or Nothing?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. I left early for my friend's place at Double or Nothing because I was just exhausted. Yeah. This kept me awake and everything. It helped. Maybe I had more caffeine and I was also playing Magic the Gathering during it as well.
Yeah.
So like maybe both of those things remained me, but like towards the end of the card, like I was full on paying attention. Yeah. Like I was paying attention, but like also like not in his point, but like towards the end of the card, like the main event, when we get to it, like I was full on like, whoa.
And I mean, there were some really good matches on the card. And I felt the same. Like my bud comes over and we'll normally, you know, order some bad food or whatever, ordering some burgers, talk some shit. We kind of talk all the way through it. You know, we catch up and watch the matches and scream at stuff and things like that. And my wife was out at drinks.
Yeah.
And we had a great time with it. And not that Double or Nothing was bad. I think I enjoyed that. And Alex, we talked about it. Like I think we really enjoyed that. But this was a good show. As a New Japan fan, like if I'm putting on my like Ichiban Sweetcast hat and looking at it, I'm like, from the New Japan point of view, I'm like, man, Homies like didn't really do much here. They weren't hugely featured, but they got a few prime spots. And obviously then that goes into the Wrestle Dynasty talk that we'll have later. But I mean, that's always going to be the feeling when the main event is not, you know, New Japan versus AEW. It's AEW versus AEW. And then the semi is New Japan versus New Japan / AEW. But anyway, we'll get to that when we go to it.
Well, so, I also feel like that because Will Ospreay was so known for New Japan, like it felt like it's a nice, like,
absolutely. I think from the outside, from us that were betrayed, not so much. We're not betrayed. That's me, because I actually think like the world of what Will Ospreay does, and like I want him to make money and be successful. You know what I mean? But you know, you kind of have your guys, and you know they eventually have to leave and go elsewhere, and you don't get to see them in the same light that you used to. And it, you know, you kind of when you're as invested as we are in a certain promotion, you know, that's a whole thing. But speaking of people that used to be in a promotion that I'm really invested in, it was the 6-man tag team match, and it was the Elite, Kazuchika Okada, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, the Young Bucks, defeating the Scissor Ace, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and the acclaimed Anthony Bowens, Max Caster, with Daddy R's. What did we all think about this? Scissor Ace, loved it.
First off, I love like Tanahashi just like part of all of it. Like that's the best thing about Tanahashi. Like he can play a goofy character, he can play serious character. He's literally like being the face of the company for like, and he will continue being the face.
And
of
he
the
just
company
he's not afraid now. To look like an idiot. You know what I mean? He's like, you know, he'll just fucking just get in. You know, he'll just get involved with whatever's happening.
And I love that about him. And I think also like, and I think Okada in AEW was not what I was expecting, but I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore it. And I'm glad he's like showing, like he's always had a goofy side, obviously in New Japan, you know, in the past, but I love what he's doing now. And
not
just
to like that current level. Like Alex was asking me about that, because Alex doesn't really have a lot of experience with New Japan. And he was like, this match had a laugh out loud moment for you, right, Alex? And you were like, is Okada always like this? And I'm like, kind of no. He was kind of like, you know, badass, cool smirk, fucking dominant champion. He has like in social media and out and around, you know, wrestling, known as a goofball and things like that. But on camera, if you were to only ever watch like his title matches and shit, you're like, this is the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen. Like you're not seeing that kind of goofy side of him in that context.
Yeah, it was just the part where he was walking around and like acting like he was like scratching on a DJ
when he was doing the DJ shit. It was so funny.
I literally laughed out loud. Yeah. I was like, that was very funny. But
And he like he does like the things like that and like the Japanese stereotype voice and all those things in a way where he still kind of comes off cooler than everybody. It's like he's playing down to fucking idiots. You know, that's sort of the way he plays it. And so he makes it hell funny, but you seriously know that he's just cool as fuck. Like,
I also really enjoyed Max's rap.
Yeah, it was pretty harsh, wasn't it?
Where he just said bitch like 600 times.
I'm really glad he's like steered away from like the raps where he was doing, where every single time he came out, he was just like, you're a boy who also likes his tag team partner. Like a lot of his raps were kind of like that a lot. Like, was kind of like, I don't know. I thought that got really corny really quick, but
I feel like a lot of the crowd is starting to turn on Max Caster a little bit. Like they're just kind of getting annoyed by him.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I understand it. I wouldn't mind Anthony Bowens to go like still being part of the Acclaim, but I wouldn't mind like a singles run for like a short one. And there's fireworks going off in the background if you hear it.
Nice.
Because it's 4th of July and it's in the Midwest. So everybody's going to fire off fireworks throughout the next few days. I would love to see Anthony Bowens like a good solid, like 2 to 3 month single run.
Yeah. I think Anthony Bowens could tap him on the shoulder for that.
A million bucks.
Yeah, he's a beast. I like that guy.
Yeah. I think a lot of people like him. And I think as a really talented wrestler, you know, and a gay wrestler and gay, person of color wrestler, like, I think there's a huge potential there for him. And, you know, you talk about people maybe leaning towards not liking Max Caster. He is a natural heel. If they ever did pull the trigger on like a breakup there and stuff like that, you could have Bowens have a huge face run.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You can give him like a solid TNT title, like TV title, 2 to 3 month run.
Yeah.
And I'd be completely okay with that.
Absolutely.
Honestly. Nothing super long, just enough to go, okay, you know what? This is great. Like he can do it.
And they probably will. They'll have to do something because like the Acclaim scissor gimmick or whatever will jump the shark. And then like before that happens, it's when you want to pull the trigger on it. You know what I mean? And while Billy Gunn is still around, there's things you could do there. You know what I mean? You could have him kicked out of the Acclaim. You could have him and Max teaming against Bowens. Like there's things you could do because Billy Gunn can be super mean too.
Billy Gunn is like a freak of nature.
Yeah.
Like that man is like close to 60 and he looks first off huge compared to a lot of the wrestlers.
Yeah.
And second of all, still can do it.
Yeah.
But I think I will say that I don't think this is just me. I think the Acclaimed, I think the Scissor Me is having the spark of starting to get stale.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying they're there. I don't think they're, I think there's like a precursor to it. And it depends on how they do the next, like this feud leading into with the Elite and like Blood and Guts coming up,
sure,
and like a potential tag title match. Like it depends on that and where it goes. I think.
Mm-hmm. I think the Acclaimed, like for something that was like a throwaway sort of tag team to start, is pretty amazing where it got to. I still remember that match they had. They had a title match with, who was it? Might have been FTR. Can't remember, but it was the one where they were like working over Bowens' knee the whole time and everybody thought the Acclaim were absolutely going to win. And then they didn't, and it kind of felt like, oh, you just fucked up. Like the crowd was so into them that they should have pulled the trigger, and then they have a rematch and then they win it then, but it wasn't quite the same. And it was like, fuck. That was one of the most like natural sort of face developments for a tag team I'd seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Mm, absolutely. All righty. So, is there anything else to touch on there? I think it was like a fun match. You know, it's a mixed tag. Everybody gets their little shine and stuff. But I definitely enjoyed it. How were you feeling about it, Alex? Yeah. You have fun with that one?
Yeah, no, I was still kind of settling in at this point. But from what I remember, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
After that, we had an Owen Hart Foundation men's tournament quarterfinal match, and it was the American Dragon, Brian Danielson, defeating the Dragon, Shingo Takagi. Now, I'd been calling for Dragon versus Dragon for a long time. How did we all feel about this? Let's start with you, Alex. Like, you're probably not as familiar with Shingo. Have you seen his stuff before? How did he come across to you?
So this was a match that I have to go back and watch. I saw most of it, but I didn't see the beginning because unfortunately the food that I got delivered was like the driver couldn't find my house. So I was standing on the front when it was happening.
Yeah.
And I came back, I saw the end, and what I saw, I totally forgot to go back and watch it because I was rewatching a couple of matches the other day, and that's one that I forgot to go back. And what I saw, it could have potentially been my second favorite match of the night.
Yeah, sure. And that speaks to the work of those guys, because you're coming in at the end, you're just seeing like the closing stretch, and you're like, holy fuck, what is this? You know?
Yeah, I probably saw about 40% of the match.
Yeah, sure. No, that's cool though. You still get the vibe though, because you know how a Danielson match kind of works. It does start a bit slower. How did you feel about it, Chris? Because I thought it was pretty amazing. They were pretty great together.
I've been a fan of Shingo since his Dragon Gate days. Uh-huh. So it's like seeing him and his career flourish has been great. My only complaint, and this is more for AEW, like I feel like during and I know they did this last year during the Owen, but like during an Owen tournament match in the middle of a already gimmick pay-per-view is like a hat on the hat.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it needed to be a tournament match.
Like it didn't need to. You could have done that on during television.
Yeah.
Having said that though, Danielson and Shingo was amazing because both gentlemen were fantastic. And I think when it came to like the in-ring wrestling of the pay-per-view, and I'll agree with Alex, like it was probably the second best wrestling match of the night. And you could probably take a wild guess what the first one is, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. I watched this with a bit of a sort of asterisk next to it, because in my mind, in my fantasy booking and everything that ties into G1 and Wrestle Kingdom and the fate of New Japan and everything, I was like watching this with a bit of a hawk eye, because I was like, if Shingo wins this, there's a chance Naito doesn't, you know, win against Moxley. Because like, I was like, if Shingo wins, then he's picking up momentum to potentially win G1, which is absolutely something that could still happen. But I was like, that would probably keep him cooking. You know what I mean? And I was like, and then if he doesn't win, then Naito will probably win. And then Shingo probably won't win G1. I think like Zach would probably win G1. So it was kind of doing all that fantasy book in my head. So I was definitely watching it with like bated breath, like, can he do it sort of thing? Because I was like, the fate of New Japan is kind of going to rest a little bit on this. But yeah, he doesn't get it done. It was still like a great match, and Danielson puts him over huge. But yeah, I was kind of like, oh, I wonder what's going to fucking happen here. But
Wound up winning that match?
Danielson.
Okay.
Danielson.
I was sitting here trying to think, and I was like, I don't even remember the end.
Yeah, yeah. Now Danielson, okay, cool. Danielson picked up the win there. But it wasn't like... It wasn't like a super fucking knocked out dominant type win. You know, he kind of out wrestles him.
No. Yeah. Okay, cool. It was like almost a struggle, and like there was some scary spots.
Yeah.
They did. I think Shingo, like, I know he was like former IWGP world champion, and like when he won it, it felt off in a sense.
Well, cause it was COVID. It was COVID, and Ospreay was the champion, and then Ospreay got injured, and then I don't remember how it ended up on Shingo, but it ended up on Shingo then. And yeah, and you're right, and it kind of felt like a bit wonky because it was wonky. You know what I mean? They just needed to put the title on somebody that could actually fucking hold it and wrestle during that time. But he repped it for like that whole time and really carried it well.
He did. Yeah. He did. And I feel like now, like, you know, post COVID, and I feel like where like the landscape of New Japan is now, like I feel like he can be the new ace, of New Japan. Honestly,
I think you know he's one of easily the top three wrestlers in the company right now, if not number one. You know what I mean? He's very, very good, and very good at that big match kind of style, and lifting other wrestlers to be there with him. So they're definitely going to keep featuring him in as big a position as they can. That's for sure. Next up was the AEW Women's World Title match. Toni Storm with Luther and Mariah May defeating Mina Shirakawa, also with Mariah May. There's been some bullshit going on with these guys. who gets first up? Let's go with Chris first up because you're a big Mariah May fan. How are you feeling about this whole timeless Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa love triangle with Mariah May?
I thought it was very well done. Mm-hmm. And I love that, like, they reference, like, Mira Shirakawa. Like, this was, like, the person, you know, Mariah May, you know, was when Japan, everything. Like, people don't understand that, like, AEW does backstory stuff a little bit different than WWE. AEW, like, will put, like, promo packages, like, on social media and everything. And they'll make you kind of, like, go, here's this person. People are getting excited about it. And making you Google and do it that way. They don't like necessarily force feed you the mm-hmm. way like WWE does. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying one way is wrong or over the other. Like, that's just, it's different. It's different ways to present the product. So I love the idea of like learning more about like the background of like Stardom and a lot of those factions and how Mina did, you know, her stuff. And like, I love the promo package they did for Mina Shirakawa. Mm-hmm. And then later on, Toni Storm almost like mirrored it mm-hmm. the same way. And like, yeah. even the cutbacks of like, of Mariah May jumping in going, you know, oh, I learned this from this person or this from this person. It was like the love of like Mariah May. And like, they're really pushing her to take the title from Toni.
Yeah.
Obviously it's mm-hmm. kind of been in the cards since the beginning, since her debut. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes it's good to be obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then people get really excited. Like, you know, they want to see it play out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And apparently the storyline they're doing is like a parody or an echo of some like old like 50s, 60s kind of movie, mm-hmm. like about a star and her understudy and everything that goes on with that. And yeah. I think it's RJ City is very into that kind of old Hollywood stuff, and he works very closely okay. like with Toni Storm and like writing all that stuff. So that kind of all tracks, you know what I mean? But I think
that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish I could remember the name of it off the top of my head. My bud told me on Monday. But he's a big AW guy. But yeah, I think it's cool what they're doing, and I think they brought in like an absolute star in Mina as well. Like,
oh
yeah, huge debut. And I think of all the Japanese Joshi talent and stuff they've brought in, they could light a rocket under her very easily. You know,
I could easily see them signing her and making her like a big American star as well. Absolutely. I mean, she knows English. She can cut a promo. Oh. She can do it really well. I mean, like, they did, AEW did a good job with like getting Riho over, mm. getting Hikaru Shida over. I think the only problem with Shida not getting over as much is just because she'll go for like long periods of time going back to Japan. I wouldn't say long, but like a couple of months stays
yeah.
in Japan, because she also is an actress out there and yeah. a stage play actress and everything. So I think that's why like you don't see Shida for like periods of time
yeah.
until like she comes back, and then she'll have like little spurts mm-hmm. and then like we'll leave again.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem. I think you could throw Mina in that role if like she ever wanted to have the interest of being on an American stage and do that way. Mm. But also like Mariah May is going to be the woman of the division. And especially with like Britt Baker coming back and then Jamie Hayter coming back mm. and they already have Mercedes Moné in. Mm. They have like the women's division at AEW has definitely turned yeah. to a
Willow and Chris
now.
Statlander.
Willow, like Chris.
Yeah.
Like it, the women's roster right now in AEW is probably the best I've seen since it's
yeah,
since
it's really beginning. Good. And I would say I Mina yeah. as well would be, she's kind of very different from a lot of the Joshi talent because she is so like boisterous and like out mm-hmm. there and kind of loud and confident. Whereas, you know, a lot are very like reserved kind of, you know, thing when they come to America. When you think of Riho's quite reserved and Shida's quite stoic, I guess you'd say, sort of thing.
Stoic is a good word.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not that they can't, you know, get loud and show fighting spirit and all that. I mean, kind of in their personality, whereas Mina's kind of a bit of a wild bitch. You know? It's kind of the vibe that they want to.
Riho is like the fun, like bubbly, like she's like the you know, the fun, you know, action, everything. You have Sheeta as like, you know, warrior princess, like won't show personality until needed to show personality. And even from the get go, because I remember like her in the first AEW paper for, I think I want to say it was before, it was post All In, but before they got their Dynamite pay-per-view or the Dynamite TV deal, they were doing like handful of pay-per-views and everything. Like she came in debuting that six woman tag. And I think Aja Kong was part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, she was always like that. And then like, she's learning English now and can cut more English promos, but Mina right off the rip can like, you've already like drawn to her and she's already gone huge over. I would love to see her in the States more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How you feel about it, Alex? You've been enjoying it?
Yeah. Something that I thought was cool was it made me like, I'm sitting here going, what's going to happen in this match? I'm like, who's going to turn on who? Maybe people interfere and it causes all three of them to like work together.
Yeah.
And it made me think so much. And I never really sat here and thought of the simple ending that they went with, where they just clean ending, all get along.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. At first, I was kind of rolled my eyes, and then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, I really like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I love that Tony Storm's like short pile driver she does, like that.
Yeah,
the Storm Zero.
It just looks devastating, eh? Like when it's done right, and it's so simple, but it just looks awesome. And when she first started doing the timeless thing, she really sort of stripped back her moveset and was doing like a real sort of old timey wrestling gimmick, and she's brought more stuff in now, kind of thing, but she still keeps it really clean. Like, yeah, she's just a great wrestler. And I think in the position we're in now, talk about the strength of the women's division. When we watched this on Monday, we watched both women's title matches all the way through. And I've been guilty before of, you know, in the past, it's a 4-hour show, I'm not really investing this, skip through it, let's get to the next thing. Not because I don't care about women's wrestling, because quite often the companies, let's be face it, haven't cared about women's wrestling. And so you can't really expect a great match. You can't expect them to have time. You don't really expect a good storyline. And so you just move past it. And it's like, I would love to see them do good work.
Women's matches either.
Yeah, exactly. And I would absolutely skip through shitty men's matches that have no info as well. That's totally fine. But I'm saying, as a rule for female wrestling, that has been by and large the way it's been done, you know. And it's really cool to see them getting to the point now where these storylines and these characters are given time and given their own little eccentricities, like, you know, even just stuff as simple as like, you know, Toni Storm coming out and it's like black and white when she's doing it and things like that, like giving them this stuff, I think it's just so important. And Willow as well, like cutting promos and things like she's been on fire. I really like her. She's one of my favorite wrestlers in AEW right now.
I love Willow. Yeah.
She
so
cut a great
much.
Promo on Dynamite like, this week.
I'm surprised. I'm so glad that like they're going to start strapping the rocket to her as being like the top baby face. She's going to be like the Rey Mysterio of like the women's division in the way of you're never going to see her as a heel.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think she could do it, but it's definitely her strength to lean into that. Yeah, for sure. Okay, guys. Hey, I've got to go take the dog down and everything. So let's call this Taken 5 and we'll light it up in a minute. Have a break, all those things, grab a drink, and I'll let you know when we're good to go again. Yeah. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Cool. Yep. No, it's only taking me about 10, 15 max. Okay.
Cool.
Cheers.
Bye. All right, cool.
See you.
I'm going to use the restroom.
All right. And with that said, let's just bounce straight on to the next match.
No break ever happened.
I've been here the whole time.
The magic of editing exposed. On the bright side, at least we don't need to edit now. We'll just stick them together and move on with our fucking lives. Thanks, dickheads. All right, then. So it is ZSJ, Zack Sabre Jr. of TMDK, defeating Orange Cassidy. Now, this was probably, I think we'd probably all agree, I was going to say, like, the biggest win of New Japan on the night. And that's saying something on a night where they reclaimed the title, but I felt like this was, like, a good fucking match. Like, I mean, it was a really good match, and it was a really good showcase of Zack Sabre Jr. And also kind of shows what both companies think of him, really, to be fair. I think he was projected really, really good. Let's jump in with you, Chris. I know you would have been big into this one, right?
I loved this one. I thought this was very good. I would say, oh man, it's up there. I don't think it's number one. I would say it would be strong number two with the previous the Danielson Shingo match is number three.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
And like, and I would say like, and this is like just wrestling wise. For that, and I think maybe like Tony versus Mina would be at like four. Mm-hmm. If we talked like top five, I don't know what number five is. Maybe we'll come to it. I don't know, but I thought this was very fun. I think and like once again, it shows you that like Orange Cassidy is more than like dude that puts hand in his pockets.
Yeah,
like he's a fun, very well rounded character. And can wrestle very well. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, I remember like when they first had Orange Cassidy like wrestle,
yeah,
and he wrestled Pac on like a pre-show pay-per-view, and it was fucking great. It was amazing. And it was because he was just like a side character. He was just there with best friends in the beginning of AEW. Now look at him, like he could be generally. I wouldn't mind seeing him with the strap in AEW, to be honest. Oh,
I mean, there's every chance in the world that could happen down the road. I mean, they obviously think the world of him. Like, he's very heavily featured, you know what I mean?
They've
bought him two sets of licensed theme music over the years.
When you have, like, multiple kids cosplaying him at shows.
When you have the owner cosplaying him at shows, you know that's like a thing. But the thing about him is he's so smart as well, in that I remember seeing an interview with him or whatever, and he was like, I realize, he's like, I love wrestling, and he's like, and I was a very good wrestler. And he's like, I just realized though that no matter how good a wrestler I was never going to break through because there was nothing really outstanding about me in like my look, my size, my anything like that. So he's like, I had to find a way to stand out that was completely different from everybody else. And that's really, really smart, you know. And I've had my times where I'm, you know, into or uninto the gimmick, you know. I've never really hated it, but sometimes I'm like, I just don't feel like watching this today. And then there's other times where I'm like, this is the best thing that's ever happened, you know, like, and this one was a really good example of how he can sort of walk that line of kind of doing both, you know what I mean? And I've really enjoyed as they've, you know, developed his character, how he's getting more and more sort of broken down and more kind of trotted on and pissed off and emotional. Like they've really, he's doing a great job of like, I'm kind of still this guy, but I've also been fucked with so much that I'm like beat up and fucking tired. And yeah.
How long you can keep the gimmick up basically? How can you keep your nonchalant attitude before you become chalant?
Yeah.
Even though that's not a word.
And that's what he's doing. He's moving from it. He's evolving. Mm-hmm. Like the look will probably remain, but it's becoming more and more common for him to speak, for him to get angry, for him to fight, like to be a fighting champion, to fight for a title. You know what I mean? Like, whereas before, like on the indies and shit, he'd just like roll into the ring with the fucking title in a backpack and not even really care and then leave, you know? So yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I think Zack Sabre Jr. can be the same way. Like he used to be like this skinny lad that like can just wrestle very well, and then he's developed more. And
he's
I just feel like
so
also
far,
like,
dude, like he's come
oh yeah,
so
he's
far.
Come so far. He got muscle on him. Like he is a tremendous wrestler and can tell a great story and be engaging as a technical wrestler. And I think like a lot of people like that world of sports style has kind of like gone on the wayside. I feel like when I was first getting into more and more like outside of American wrestling, when I was learning more about independence and when I was learning more about like the UK scene and the Japanese scene and Mexican scenes and everything, like you'll learn more about like the world of sport. Like I learned a lot more of like the world of sport, like wrestling, chain wrestling, everything from Chikara, honestly. And Chikara, like all the people that have been in Chikara, most like a good 2/3 of that roster, that core roster, is in AEW currently. Mm-hmm. And I learned more about all of those styles and everything. And Zack Sabre Jr. is like that guy that can tell a very good story, very Danielson-esque, that you know, Danielson started getting over when he started doing the yes chants and then like the comedy bits with Kane and everything. And I feel like he started to develop more as like more than just say, I'm a very good wrestler, but now here's my personality.
Sure.
And I think Zack Sabre Jr. is just about at that cusp as well.
Yeah.
That I feel like either if not this G1, but 2025 G1, he should be elevated.
He should be the Western ace of New Japan. Like
I agree
at the moment. Like, and he lives there. He lived there all through COVID. Like, you know, I mean, he's proven himself to New Japan. He is like, he lives in Japan. Like he is a Japanese wrestler. So I feel like he would have earned that kind of respect. Alex, have you, you'd be familiar with ZSJ, even though you're not as familiar with like New Japan, like you would be pretty familiar with him by now, right?
So what's kind of funny is like, I feel like he's almost like Japanese folklore to me. Like I've heard all the great things and I don't think I've ever watched the match.
Really?
And I could be totally wrong about that. I could be forgetting something.
Well, this leads to a fun game then, because what we can do is we could each suggest one of our favorite Zack Sabre Jr. matches to give to Alex as homework. Because straight away when we started talking about the development of Zack Sabre Jr., and there's many, many good Zack Sabre Jr. matches, but one of the ones I enjoyed the most recently was Zack Sabre Jr. in the PWA Coliseum tournament in Australia very recently, the last one they just had. He gets all the way to the finals, but in the like semifinals, he versed was it Paris? I always mix up the two brothers, Paris de Silva, Jude Dude London, and then Paris de Silva. So the two brothers that are the Velocities, and he versed them kind of one by one, right? And both matches were amazing, but his one with Jude the Dude London was so fast and so crazy. And it was a really good look at Zach doing non-Zach things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Hitting hard, taking bumps, Zach driver, fucking, it was killer. Like, it was really, really good. And those were some of the things that when I was getting into Zack Sabre Jr. that I used to criticize about him. I'd be like, he would front up to these bigger wrestlers when he was like, you know, smaller than he is now, but like no selling stuff, not convincing back bumps. I didn't even think some of like his holds really, it was like kind of he was twisting in a way but not putting stank on it that made me believe it was really hurting anybody. Mm-hmm. All of these kind of things, all of that stuff is gone now. Now he's one fucking, hits really hard, takes crazy bumps. Like he's really like developed. So, and I can send you a link to this so you can watch it, but I would absolutely recommend, my one would be Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jude Dude London at PWA Coliseum in Australia.
I think one, if you need something more modern and recent, obviously you can talk about the, you know, I mentioned it before, Zack Sabre Jr. and Hedgesero down in CMLL. That was just fairly recently, both technical wrestlers. You could talk about recently what back at Wrestle Dream, where Zack Sabre Jr. took on Danielson.
That was
if
crazy.
You need to rewatch that as well. If you want to talk New Japan, I mean, you know, back in like 2018, I had to look at like some of the top matches or what everything like was just rated by Meltzer.
Yeah.
Just as a reference point, because it took me a while to figure out like what really stood out. But like him versus Okada in 2018 was probably pretty solid.
Yeah. Also, when him and Tai Chi were together, like as a tag team in Suzuki Gun, they had some fucking killer tag team matches like as a team. And that was the beginning of Zack Sabre Jr. developing it into who he is now. You know, a lot of people like
miss Suzuki Gun.
Oh, I don't strangely miss it. I fucking 100% miss it. It was my favorite faction.
I like the factions right now in New Japan, like nothing, like Bullet Club is like a shell of its former self. LIJ is there, you know, like LIJ used to be like the big outlaw. Suzuki Gun used to be like the real assholes. Like TMDK is cool, but like, it feels like another like Gaijin style faction, and then we don't talk about House of Torture.
Oh, we do. I'm coming around on House of Torture. And then United Empire is kind of left a little bit weird as well. A few of these things are left weird as well, like Chaos and United Empire when their leaders leave and go to AEW. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then even Bullet Club, Jay, like all the leaders of these factions have all left, and then they're re-establishing their identity. But that's right. That's a completely different conversation. Alex, I cut you off because we got really excited about recommending Zack Sabre Jr. matches, but what did you actually think about when you did see the match? Because you said, like, it's folklore, you haven't really seen many of them. This is probably the first one that you spent a lot of time watching, and it was also against Orange Cassidy, which in itself is always a very interesting kind of thing, like how the person will respond to his style and things like that. So what was your overall take?
I really enjoyed it. It's another one I need to go back and rewatch. I watched the whole thing, but I'd like to rewatch that one again because all I can really remember is the end. I don't know if is that a submission he does a lot, or is that something he made up on the spot? Because that was awesome.
It's kind of funny because he kind of makes up submissions on the spot all the time.
And I kind of figured that was what was going
and
on.
And then we'll give them a ludicrous name just off the top of his head. Like if you look at like his, I wonder if. I don't think it says it on Cage Match, does it? Like on the old New Japan side, it used to say what the title of the finishing move was, and it was always very entertaining seeing what Zach's finisher name was. But I don't think I've seen that one particularly. But yeah, he'll just wrap people up into pretzels. Like, and
it's rare you see a submission in pro wrestling where you're like, that would hurt me.
That one felt like a fatality.
That would kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would be crippled for life if I did that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For like for example of like the wacky name. So he had a submission hold called the Clarky Cat.
Yeah.
And then he did this is an over the shoulder single leg Boston Crab arm lock combination. He called it Clarky Cat Bad Balloon Remix.
Yeah, like he does stuff like that, and there's Napalm Lumi, and there's one that's like, hurrah, another year. As the time marches on through the blah, 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 it's just like fucking bullshit. Like I've got a Zack Sabre Jr. shirt, and it's got him in the lock, and then he's got this huge speech bubble that is the title of the move. Like,
oh, that's cool.
I wonder if we could find that real fast. Hurrah, another year. Let's quickly.
Sounds like stupid shit that I would name like a Spotify playlist.
Yeah, right. Okay, so this is the title. Zack Sabre Jr. just beat Ishii with hurrah, another year. Surely this one will be better than the last. The inexorable march of progress will lead us all on to happiness. That's like the name of the move.
sick post-rock band name.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's fucking who he is as a person. But yeah, it's hell good. I'm really glad you enjoyed it, man, because I would think there's very big things. There's a power vacuum in New Japan at the moment, and I think there should really be big things for him. You know, they separated Suzuki-gun. They moved him out on his own. They've given him his own faction. You know what I mean? They're putting him in prominent places on New Japan, on AEW. He did not win the New Japan Cup. That's a tournament he has won a couple of times, and he's one of the only people to win it multiple times. And then he's in G1, and there's a very sort of big movement behind him, hoping that he'll win G1 and at least challenge for the world title at the Tokyo Dome.
I'd like to see it.
I would also like to see it.
Also, I'm gonna try to convince Chris to name an RPW show. Hurrah! Another year. Surely the one will be better than the last.
He'll do it. He will absolutely do it.
He won't do it. I've been trying to get him to name a show. The name a show. Streets Ahead.
Yeah.
Which is a community reference, and it won't ever happen.
It won't fly. You've got to be more gutter when it comes to Chris. All right, then. So then we had six-man tag team match. It was Hook, Shibata, and Samoa Joe defeating the Learning Tree, Big Bill, Chris Jericho, and Jeff Cobb. Now, we had thrown around predictions as to who we thought the random guy would be. It was just before, and then we kind of thought it was maybe Suzuki, but then we also thought he challenged him to fight him, and so we didn't actually know what had happened at the time. Obviously, Jeff Cobb stepped in as that mystery opponent, which I was actually really excited to see and thought it made sense, because if you rewind all the way back to early AEW, Jeff Cobb came in as a fucking hired gun for Chris Jericho then. You know what I mean? So the ties, it kind of works. Like in those previous things, he was like, he brought in Jeff Cobb to destroy Kenny Omega or something like that. So there are, you know, ties to make that work. I got to be honest, I wasn't super caring about this match by the time it happened. I enjoy the Hook Shibata Samoa Joe combo. Not so much the learning tree. I love Brian Keith, obviously, and it's a shame he's been injured, and I really look forward to seeing sort of what's from him next. Actually, was he back come Dynamite? Did I see him taking bumps? Was he wrestling?
I think he's still there, but his arm is in a sling.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think he was on this past one.
Yeah, I think Dynamite, I seem to recall him taking a bump and stuff. Like, I think he might be on the move, but it was enough to put him out. But either way, I can't wait for his single ring debut. I'm on the fence with the Jericho learning tree thing because, like, I know he'll get there. You know what I mean? And I'll end up really enjoying it. I always do. I'll be like, what's this fucking stupid shit Jericho's doing? And then by the end of it, I'll like it. And even on commentary, some of the things he's saying has got me chuckling. I'm like, that motherfucker's getting me again. I know he is. And I'm like, by the time it's done, I'll be like, Jericho's hilarious as the learning tree. But at the moment, it's sort of that awkward kind of he's figured it out and just being annoying on purpose and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I think take it or leave it. Hey?
I think he's leaning into like that faux, like it
smart mark.
It's definitely a meta character.
Yeah,
because he's being himself in a weird sense, but it's a character of himself. But the character is also referenced on like the behind the scenes stories about like how certain people will be like, you know, locker room leaders, and you hear those stories and everything.
And how people so talk like, about him online and about those people online. So he does exactly what they say he does or talks like or things like that.
Exactly.
Which is funny. But it's like, you know.
It's a hat in a hat, but in a good way.
Yeah. I think he get there. I did enjoy that, like, because Hook beats him with his own finish, then the next week he's, like, getting fucking Taz thrown out and stuff like that, like, due to gimmick infringement. He's like, you never do that, guys. You don't use a locker infringement. Like, and it's just, like, you can imagine conversations, like, in fucking locker rooms where wrestlers have said that shit and he's been listening just, like, fucking grow up, you know? Like, and so, so yeah, it's pretty fun. But I think I'm still pretty happy with the Shibata, Hook, Samoa Joe dynamic though, right? Like, I know that's been one of your favorite teams. We've been enjoying them bullying everybody, right, Alex?
Yeah. My favorite part of the whole match was watching Shibata and Hook walk away from a dive like Samoa Joe does. And then just on Samoa Joe's face, he just looks like a proud dad.
Yeah, that's funny. He knows.
Yeah. It's such a weird combination, and I'm just for it. I just need Hook to be starting to wear like a towel like his dad.
Yeah.
And then like him coming out with at least a black towel. And then you got Shibata with the red and then Joe with the white. There'd be all the towel boys
that's,
or whatever.
That's the final thing. But I feel like with Hook's look when he comes out, having a towel would be cool. It'd probably fuck up his amazing hair though if he had it over his head. But he can wear it around his neck.
Put it around your neck. Like,
yeah.
Joe's doing it. Shibata's doing it. Get a black and orange towel.
Yeah.
Or like black with like orange stripes at the end.
Yeah.
Reference that like, oh, he's Taz's son.
Yeah.
And like it'll be great. Like it'll be, but I want like a small little like, hey, before the like go into the ring, I'm like, here, catch. And like you see Taz or somebody like toss it to him, and then he comes out and wears it and goes, and it'll be really like just like a fan thing.
That'll probably be his like sort of final form. You know what I mean? Once he's beyond this development thing, once he hits that. Next up was the AEW TNT title ladder match for the vacant title. It was Jack Perry versus Dante Martin versus ELP versus Konosuke Takeshita versus Leo Rush versus Mark Briscoe. Now,
oh my God, can we talk about that Blue Thunder Powerbomb on the tables?
I was going to say, this one spot we always want to talk about.
Fucking, oh,
it was unbelievable.
I still dream about that spot.
It was unbelievable. couple of spots from fucking Takeshita was a fucking Iron Man in this match, right? He was just fucking laying everybody out. At the end, after all that, and he's in the ring and looking at the ladder, I'm like, he's killed everybody. There's like literally nobody left to fucking stop him just walking up this at his own pace. And then I think like Briscoe rolled in or something like that. I was also super concerned when Briscoe and him did that spot to the outside where he's like on a table under a ladder and Briscoe's flipping outside. And like he doesn't even roll out from under the ladder to fucking avoid the spot. He just takes it. And I'm like, homie, you're in G1 in like 2 weeks. Like just roll out of the way. It would make no fucking difference. It's like, you know, Briscoe wipes out and kills himself. That checks out and you're still injured from earlier stuff. Like, why did you have to take it? Like, I understand.
I hated that people complained that, like, oh, Takeshita should have won it. And I'm like, Takeshita's going to be in the G1.
No, Takeshita shouldn't have won.
In a few weeks. Like, I feel like that's a bigger flex than winning the television title, which honestly it was going to be on Jack Perry. It was kind of obvious.
Yeah, it was going to happen. That's the storyline. And it, looking at everybody in that match, me and my mate were running through it. Like we were like, Jack Perry should win this. Like it makes the most sense for him to be the guy holding it. You know, like what's Takeshi going to do? Take it to Japan? I mean, he could, but then it's like it limits the losses he can have, and it'd just be a mess.
Right. Yeah. It would be a logistics nightmare. Like it made sense. And I always love like in multiple man ladder matches, it's always like the power guy that is in the match. Cause you think ladder matches is all the flippy people, mm-hmm. you know, then you got like the one awkward power guy. Like I always enjoyed like when Big Show was in like a multiple man ladder match because he was just there.
Yeah.
And like taking all the moves and taking all the violence and the mm-hmm. brunt of a lot of the moves and everything. And I thought Takeshita was fantastic. And I feel like when he comes back from the G1, I feel like they should start having him do something. I don't know where. It's a shame that, like, I don't know what is preventing him. Like, I love the Don Callis family. I love, like, Don Callis in general.
Yeah.
I think he's, like, a great manager bastard heel. I think it's fantastic. But I just, like, it's kind of obvious Kyle Fletcher is going to break away from the family. He's going to join back in with Ospreay. And when Mark Davis is back and healthy, you know, you have your United Empire in AEW that, or whatever they'll call it, because like they did Bullet Club Gold and then they have officially changed it to Bang Bang Gang now. Like, so you'll have like that United Empire type thing and name it something else and whatever. I'd love to see Takeshita like do something more.
Do you think there's a chance that Kyle does not join back with like Ospreay yet? Cause I could definitely see him like,
I see it happening, but with, like, it's not
long-term.
No, I think he will join back, but it would probably be post All In or depending on what they're going to do with Ospreay. If it is Ospreay MJF, then I think they'll hold off. If it's Ospreay going for the title again at All In, then maybe, but then that also depends on, and that's what I love about like AEW a little bit is just like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like you can sort of understand what's going on, but like not enough.
There's a few, especially in that scene, there's a few like, little divergent roads they can take. So
yeah.
And that's always interesting. How did you feel about the match, Alex? Like, I always love these kind of big ladder matches. Multi-man ladder matches are one of my favorites.
I'm a sucker for them.
Yeah, same.
I've been a fan of them since the first Money in the Bank match. Those are like, I always look forward to those at the WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I wish they would still do them at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Money in the Bank. But it's easy for me to sit here and say that was my favorite match because it's
just
love a good ladder match.
Yeah, we just like that kind of stuff. It was definitely one of my favorite on the card. Is it like technically the best? Maybe not, but Sue, definitely the most fun. And that Blue Thunder Bomb was fucking crazy.
I usually try to like attribute my favorite match of the night to a singles match.
Yeah.
And or a triple threat or something that's not like a crazy spot fest, you know, because it's easy to sit here and say that the spot fest ladder match was your favorite. But
sure.
I mean, I love Mark Briscoe. He's like hometown hero for me. Mm-hmm. Lives like right down the road from us. So
oh
really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
you try to get chicken from him?
I I could, I guess. I don't know the man. I know he lives like maybe 15 minutes from my house, but I'm not going to sit here and say that that's my boy or nothing like that.
Right.
Yeah. So. But yeah, no.
Just that coming like, awesome. What's happening? What's happening, chicken? As I call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we can all agree that like something like this is a really nice flavor on a show. You know, you throw in a major spot fest like this. ELP's now in there. He gets like a good little spot to be seen. The fact that he was the guy taking the Blue Thunder Bomb doesn't hurt either, and probably one of the craziest to do it.
I don't know anything about that guy.
Oh, you would like him. He's good.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah.
He's from Canada. He used to be a big heel.
Mm-hmm. What? You weren't impressed with him?
I think it has something to do with the fact that like he went against AR Fox for the spot. And I love AR Fox. AR Fox is going to get this spot because I don't even know this guy.
Yeah.
And then he lost. And I was like, oh. What
the- So you're holding a grudge. Well, you'll see more. We'll get you to more Japan stuff.
I thought it was Logan Paul at first.
Yeah, I could say that. I could say
like
that.
Looks like him a little bit.
Yeah. ELP used to be Bullet Club, but now he's out of that. And yeah, nah, he's good. He's good value.
He's brokenhearted now because Hikuleo is going to the WWE.
Yeah, he was tagged with him.
He's just kind of like floating around. He's part of it. Like when Japan factions, I don't know. Hopefully I'm not making it sound like a mansplaining, and Rafe can jump in on this. But like when you're not part of a faction in Japan, you're kind of like in this middle ground.
You're kind of lost where you're a little bit.
There.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot more like comic character. It's either comedic characters or like old veterans.
Yeah.
That like are not doing anything. Like, you know, for example, in New Japan currently, Tanahashi is in that realm.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he's not part of a faction, but he's there. And obviously he's the president and he's on his way out. So he's going to be transitioning, you know, into the back of the office while still wrestling. So like, he's just there. ELP used to be Bullet Club. It's not Bullet Club anymore. So he's kind of a like somewhat like a comedic character sort of, but he's still over with the crowd.
And what they did was they were building G.O.D., right? Like they moved him out of Bullet Club and put him with Tama Tonga, you know, Tonga Loa and fucking future Piccolo. Taller Tonga, I guess. Like with the idea that, to be honest, to fucking put a good wrestler in the group. You know what I mean? And to have him sort of craft their imagery, he changed their music and did a few things and sort of started to mold G.O.D. a little bit in his image. And that was kind of the vibe, like we're going to put you with G.O.D. and we're going to make this faction cool. Problem, they all left and went to WWE. So now he's just sort of like fucking left on his own. You know what I mean? And and then because that has happened and he just like they just lost their tag titles and his fucking partner just walked out on him probably to go to WWE. He's sort of doing this brokenhearted, like, I don't really know what's next thing. So then when you bring that kind of vibe into a match, like, you know, he's not really firing on all cylinders. Normally he's like real cocky. He's fucking got light up shit on. He's like this whole thing. But at the moment he's not that guy. So I could see how you'd be like, oh, yeah, what, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway.
He was very charismatic during like the Bullet Club days. And like he was like, he would like poke your eye, but he'll like low blow you. He'll like scratch his fingernails. He'll like spit in your face. Like,
yeah.
He was really like
the back cocky, scratch was like, my favorite because he'd do shit like tightrope the ropes, fucking get to the thing, backflip over you, and then just do a back rake. Like, you know, he'd do these like spectacular lead ups to the dumbest moves and shit like that. So, yeah.
And he
crazy high jumps and really kind of extreme move set. He also used to do like a loaded boot gimmick. So he does a super kick they call Sudden Death. And he used to like, it was like a loaded boot where he was fucking knocking dudes out one kick and stuff like that. Robbie Eagles ended up fucking tearing his shoe off and finding the weight in it or whatever fucking gimmick it was. Like they've done all sorts of stuff with it. But he can talk. He's a graphic designer. He works in New Japan and does graphic design stuff and things like that. He's really talented. So yeah, you'll see better things from him. He's just in that weird place at the moment where they're figuring him out. Next up was the TBS title and New Japan Strong Women's title match, Mercedes Moné defeating Stephanie Vaquer. So I've only become exposed to Stephanie Vakur over sort of this run to this match with.
Yeah, same
know,
here.
You know, thing and stuff like that.
Same.
Just really impressive, eh? Just fucking something pretty cool.
She went from being somebody I've never even heard of to like one of my favorite women wrestlers within a span of like 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So, just really cool.
And that match like solidified it. I thought she was incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Mercedes Moné does nothing for me, so.
Yeah.
I can understand, like, I think Mercedes is like one of those like characters that like, if you're not gung ho for her, like she's like, okay. But I think it was good for Mercedes to be in this match against somebody like Stephanie and I know there's like stories about like Mercedes wanted this match to make like Stephanie a star and everything like that. And I think it succeeded.
Yeah.
In that case. But you know, like I'm not super crazy about Mercedes, but I don't like dislike her in any sense of the word. Like it's not like, oh, I'm going to change the channel. Cause I'm never like, there are people that I don't like. And then I'd be like, it's whatever. But like, I won't go out of my way to go, oh, I'm going to change the channel because they are on, or they're an instant turnoff. I'm not going to go. Like, shut up. Like the herder, shut up. Like, come on. Like, do you not like the character because you're not liking the character, or you're not liking the character because they're doing a good job as a heel? Big brain moment there.
Yeah.
But I think, do I think that Mercedes should have won both belts? No. Do I think putting both titles on Stephanie would have been a good idea? No. Also, I think this should not have been a double title match. I think this should have gone for one of the titles.
Yeah. Sure.
But I understand that like this is kind of retribution, and like Mercedes was originally slated to win the New Japan Women's title.
The belt was made for her, essentially.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then basically the injury happened and stuff like that. So it's come full circle. I will say though that like because of it's been a bit since Mercedes has built up steam, I guess, you know what I mean? Since she was out and then injured and then things like that, I feel like she just needs a little bit of time to cook, you know, because there was a time, especially in like that early good NXT sort of thing, that she was easily one of like the best sort of female wrestlers going, you know, like
I think so.
I still like of, you know, of all the women's matches I've seen, one of my favorite of all time is still like Bayley versus Sasha Banks. It was really, really good storytelling match like between the two, you know. And so I think she absolutely has the ability to do it. And I think she's got the like the passion and want to like tell those stories and stuff. She just needs time to cook. You know, I'm not an unbelievable fan or anything like that, but I think you give her time, she'll get there.
I think fast forwarding her for like the TBS title and then like now thrusting on another title on her right off the rip feels very premature.
It does like, a little bit, but it's also that's her character, right? Like she doesn't really in the current way that she is, and even actually back when she was Sasha Banks, she's not really the chaser of titles. She's like, I'm the boss and I have all the shit, right? Like, so, and then you have people chase her. But I know what you're saying is it's kind of a little bit of a fast forward. It's not really an organic build. She just steps into that place and takes it. But I guess that kind of lends to that heat a little bit too. Like, she just gets all the opportunities and gets everything. Then you want to see people take it from her.
Exactly. So, like, she plays the heel very well. So,
yeah sure. Absolutely. I think as well, like, I just didn't want her to beat Willow straight away. Like a double or nothing. Like I really felt like there'd probably be more legs in it if she lost to Willow and then maybe wins this title from Stephanie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you could kind of lead to a double match with her and Willow or something like that, which was the original match that she got injured in or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but I still thought this was a really good match though.
Oh, yeah. I would say, I would call that like number five. I think the other women, I thought Tony Mina was a little bit better. But I would say out of all of the matches, I think that would probably be the fifth best, like when it came to the in-ring portion of it was the best, was like the fifth best in my opinion.
Sure. Absolutely. The next match was the IWGP World Heavyweight Title Match, Tetsuya Naito versus John Moxley. Now, let's start with Alex, because again, from the outside, I hear you sighing and I have similar opinions. But
I'm
Alex,
be straight up honest with you right now.
Yeah.
I started to fade right around this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That match did not keep me awake the whole time it was going.
That match was rough, a struggle to watch.
And like, do you have much to, have you seen much Naito over your time, Alex? Because this is super interesting to me.
AEW.
Like how somebody that doesn't know his history, hasn't been exposed to him, how they read him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. No, from what I remember and what I saw, I thought it was fine. I'm also not the biggest fan of Mox's in-ring work. Mm. I know. But whatever.
And like, I get why people don't like Mox. I personally like Mox's style. I have no problem with Mox. I honestly, and this is like, I guess my hottest take, I am not a fan of Naito. Mm. I never really have been a fan of Naito. I also have a big problem with the Destino move.
Yeah.
I hate finishers that you need such a huge buildup to to do.
And cooperation from your partner as well. Yeah.
Exactly. And like, and also like, don't get me wrong, One Winged Angel is a cool looking move. Mm. And like when he pulls it off and like it's an impact and it feels like it's a finisher move. But the setup to do it is wonky as hell.
Yeah.
Like, that's why, like, we talked about, like, Storm Zero, that, like, I like moves that, like, at any time you can fire it off and then it can end the match abruptly.
Like the last call, like Swerve's fucking kick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Or the Hidden Blade. Like, it literally can come out of nowhere. It can be a desperation. You can hit it and then all of a sudden it's impactful. Mm. You know it's coming. That's why, like, the RKO is so, so
Stone Cold Stunner, fucking like, the super kick. Like, all these ones that are, like, boom, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always love, like, don't get me wrong, I love me a good, like, pile driver, tiger driver, power bomb, the big suplex bridge thing, whatever. Mm. But, like, I hate the Destino. I think the Destino is, like, a terrible friggin'.
And then he's also got, like, variations on it, right? And
yeah.
So, like, he kind of does, like, a running one, and then he does, like, the real one. And, like, the commentary, like, AEW commentary doesn't really know the difference either. Like, so they're like, oh, you kicked out the Destino. It's like, well, that's kind of not really the Destino yet. It's sort of like a variant of it, but it's not really what that is. Like, you know, those little small details. And then when you get to the end of this match, it felt like it went off the rails. It got real clunky. And then how he sort of won, like the move looked fucking wrong. Like it looked weird. And then it was just like a 1-2-3. It was like, dude, call an audible and kick out. You guys have got to go again. Like you got to do something else because that's not fucking the finish. Like it's just not,
it just felt weird. Like the whole move, like, and I've seen those two fight before and it was they fought
like New Japan, but New Japan in America, and their last match was fine. Like, was it the best match of all time? Absolutely not. Because sometimes I think they don't, styles just don't always gel. Like Naito's a pretty interesting character in that he's this like fucking, you know, purposefully annoying, slow person that gets under his, you know, people's skin and things like that. And then Moxley is this kind of aggressive character that does his best work when he's like throwing fists and somebody's throwing them right back, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they're juxtaposed very different to each other, right? Like, and so that can work, but does it? And this felt like on this particular night, it didn't. And then you're talking about the IWGP title feeling like it's a foregone conclusion that it's going back to Naito. So that lends to it. I didn't like that before leading up to it, Naito said, if Moxley beats me, he can have my spot in G1 as well. He said that. He didn't need to say that. That was putting the cart before the horse. And then I'm like, well, he's definitely not winning now because there's no way the motherfucker's going to G1. Like, it's just not happening. And so I already knew he was going to win. And then it's kind of clunky. And then it's the second last match. So it doesn't even feel like that big a deal. And the whole thing just felt fucking weird. Like, and I,
it did.
Yeah, I really didn't enjoy it. Like, I was like, oh, this isn't it for me. I just want this to be over. Look, the title's back in Japan. Let's just reset and fucking go from there, you know? But I feel bad for Mox too, because like, do I like every Mox match? No. Do I like Mox as a wrestler? Yes. Like, everything I hear from him, like in his interviews and things like that, the effort he puts in, how serious he takes New Japan every time he's there, all those things. Like, I thought it was great that he got the fucking title, and I would have liked to see a quality run that ended well, you know, and that it kind of like ended with this just like fucking a whimper on an AEW show feels like him being shortchanged. I feel like he should have had a last defense and lost it in Japan, like, you know.
I mean, and that comes in a little bit about, you like, remember when Kurt Angle had the IWGP title?
No.
And like during his TNA run?
Yeah. Nah,
like,
I do not.
Remember that stuff? Like that, like, it just feels like when New Japan straps a title on a Gaijin wrestler, it always feels like they don't get a proper run. Unless it's like something special, like Kenny Omega felt like a little different. Jay White was a little different because like
Kenny Omega felt different at the start, but then because the AEW stuff happened, it also sort of ended with a whimper, where it was like, he's just losing this because he's leaving. Like it didn't feel like the story played out. And I hate that, you know, and that's part to do with like the wrestling business and stuff. But yeah, it is that thing where it's like, you know, can there really be like a big, good, you know, Western wrestler title run? Who knows? It'll take the right guy. Maybe Zach, because he would fucking, he's not ever going to sign.
Zach's the guy.
He's never going to fucking sign with another, like with WWE. He doesn't give a fuck. So,
no.
You know, that's it. But yeah, I don't know if there's really much else to say about this match. I was super mostly interested. I knew your and my opinions would be very similar, Chris, but I thought from the outside point of view of somebody that isn't really familiar with Naito's history. Naito's huge, Alex. Like, he's like the biggest fucking star in Japan.
He is.
I've watched him.
I know the name.
Yeah. He leads LIJ, which is easily the most popular faction. And I've seen him, like, the first time I went to Japan in the Tokyo Dome, I watched him fight Okada for that title and lose. And it was like the air was fucking sucked out of the building, right? And then I watched him 2 years later, maybe 3 years later, win the title, and it's the most crazy fucking wrestling moment I've ever been a part of life. You know what I mean? The place fucking exploded. Like, so, like, he definitely has his place, and in Japan he's a huge, huge star, but he's slowing down a little bit. There was obviously some weirdness happening on the night. Something wasn't gelling, and yeah, you just get what you get. But in that, it is lucky that we then went on to have the main event that we did, because this main event's kind of everything I want to see from an AEW main event, right?
Can I ask one question real quick?
Sure.
About Naito?
Yeah.
And his group of people?
Yeah.
And if this is not an appropriate question for the podcast, it can be edited out.
No, that's fine.
Why do they all these Japanese guys look like stereotypical Mexican guys?
I'm glad you asked that. So
there's a reason.
So the story of Naito, you got to rewind a little bit. So Naito, when he was in Japan, he was first known as the Stardust Genius, and he was like, going to get him Naito wrestler, Japanese wrestler, right? He ends up getting his heart broken by the Japanese fans. So he was supposed to fight for the world title for the first time in the main event of the Tokyo Dome. But at the same time, there was a really hot intercontinental title feud happening underneath, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but it was Shinsuke Nakamura and Hiroshi Tanahashi for the,
I believe you are correct,
the, on that. The intercontinental
and
title.
And that was the main event. That ended up being the main event.
They put it to a fan vote because they were huge feuds at the time. Will it be Okada and Naito for the world as the main, or will it be Tanahashi and Nakamura? And the fans voted for Tanahashi and Nakamura. So Naito gets his main event taken away from him. He's in the semi, and they fucking, it does not go well. Like, he kind of gets booed out or whatever. Osaka fucking hate him. So then he leaves New Japan and he goes to Mexico. And in Mexico, there is a faction called Los Ingobernables. Not LIJ, but just Los Ingobernables. Okay. Guys like Andrade, who was Rush at the time. I think his father, Rush at the time. Fucking who was
Andrade? Rush was in it.
Yeah. Andrade was under a mask, and I'm mind blanking on his name. Anyway, a bunch of Mexican luchadors.
You said Andrade was Rush at the time, and you almost blew my mind.
No. Andrade was fucking.
Asian started. Oh,
this is
going to
make me
head.
So fucking angry if I can't remember it. That's actually going to drive me insane if I don't just look it up right now. Andrade El Idolo. What was your fucking name?
I didn't know this was going to go so deep with
Now I'm pissed off because I can't remember. La
he
Sombra.
Was Guerrero, La he Sombra. Was Guerrero Azteca.
He was not. So Andrade was La Sombra. There you go. Rush was in it. I think Rush's dad. Okay. All these guys, right? And Naito ends up joining that faction, right? So he's with all the Mexican guys. And
gotcha.
It reignited his love for wrestling, and he loved wrestling in Mexico, and he started to don like the same shit as they were wearing. So when he comes back to New Japan, he comes back as Los Ingobernables de Japón, Los Ingobernables of Japan, you know. And then he starts bringing in shit like he has different members of the roster debut under masks and interfere for him and things like that, which is something that isn't historically done by Japanese wrestlers, you know. Like you get Evil comes under a fucking mask, like a suit and a mask, and then, you know, he was a former young lion named Watanabe. He's now Evil. And fucking Bushi, who is a, you know, a Japanese luchador, he's with him. And then Sonata fucking comes in fucking under a mask with a baseball bat and fucking clocks Okada during a title match, and he gets the world title for the first time, and they build LIJ. Hiromu Takahashi joins, and that's why they all have that Mexican luchador aesthetic and look, because that is what the faction is. That's like its roots. And like, if Rush ever comes to Japan, he would team with them and shit. You know what I mean? They were all part of, like, whenever the CMLL guys or whatever are there, they're all LIJ. They're all Los Ingobernables together, you know. So that is why, because that's the roots of the faction. And like Tsuji, who led the, you know, the three faction that was on the 0 Hour, he was always kind of like nodded, like he's probably Naito's fucking guy, like he'll be the next LIJ guy. When he went on excursion, Young Lions will finish their training, then they'll go on excursion for like up to 2 years. He went to Mexico. So he was in Mexico, like, for a fucking thing, and he also was in UK as well. Like, he did both. But, like, these things happen, so it all makes sense when they come together, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So I don't know. The only one that might be – I don't know if everybody in LAJ did excursion to Mexico. Like, I don't know if Sonata ever went there or
Teton or was from Mexico, right?
Teton is a CMLL guy, absolutely.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting.
And then Teton's there. I don't know if Shingo ever went to Mexico.
Nah, but he's – yeah. So Sonata, Shingo, and Evil, I'm not sure, but all the others have. Like, yeah.
Well, Shingo was trained by Ultimo Dragon in the Toriumon gym anyway with Dragon Gate, and that had Mexican overtones in that as well.
Hiromu did. Hiromu had like a bigger run in Mexico probably than Naito did. That's where he fucking built his whole time bomb craziness there. He was fucking insane in Mexico. But yeah, anyway, that's a good question. A little bit of a history lesson for anybody that knows, but that is why they have that aesthetic. And if you even see the Los Ingobernables logo, like the Samuel L one, it looks the same. Like it's a slight variation. You know, Naito has like his own one, like the LIJ one, but they kind of all have the same kind of branding. Alrighty. So now I've thrown all my notes away. Let's talk about the main event. So the main event was the AEW World Title match. Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana versus Will Ospreay. Now, I'm sure we kind of all want to go off on this because I feel like this was really, really fun. I will say, just talking about the looks of each guy as they came in, Will doing the
Hayabusa,
the nod to Hayabusa, yep, and then
that was cool.
And then Swerve's like black and gold gear, just looking like an absolute fucking champion, like, and Jim Jones like fucking walking him to the ring and shit like that.
Sick.
He's really feeling like a fucking like top of the world champion right now. Like, it's really cool. Who wants to go first? Put up your hand. Who's gonna bang on first.
Let Alex go first.
You go, Alex. How are you feeling about everything?
That match was, I went back and watched that match twice so far.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sorry. But just from the get-go, like, just them staring at each other and Swerve's got that smile on his face,
yeah. You know,
that cocky, like, smile. Not, I don't know how you wanted to explain it, but he just looks awesome.
Yeah.
Everything
yeah.
about him just
it's just cool as fuck, right? Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, like, I went back and watched his match that he had with AR Fox in Lucha Underground mm-hmm. back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how much bigger he is now. I didn't even realize that. Like, he was like really, really skinny back then.
Yeah. He's gained muscle since yeah. joining AEW.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. He's putting on size for real. But I mean, he was already way bigger, like come WWE, come AEW. But even now, like, it's night and day when you think about original Killshot versus where he is now.
Yeah. I remember when we first watched the match, you know, at the end, I'm like, that was probably one of the best matches I've ever seen. Going back and watching it again, it does start pretty slow, but it probably is the best match that I've seen all year.
That's how you got to build it, though. Like yeah. Will knows that, like, New Japan main event style, right? And when they do it, like, it always starts slower, but it builds to a yeah. fever pitch that's, you know, unbelievable. And even though they did have that little bit of shenanigans, like, towards the end, it wasn't that much. It was, like, kind of just yeah. enough to sort of give them an out and give reasons for things, but it didn't overstay its welcome. I was worried we'd have, like, the fucking whole family hitting the ring and yeah. fucking MJF in there and, like, all kinds of bullshit going on. So I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it was cool as well that it really, and I'd heard it was, you know, Will had made it very known at AEW that he wanted to do it, but it was like nobody should have a problem laying down for the champion. Like, mm-hmm. and Will had apparently felt like, and it was discourse online, like Swerve is just a placeholder until Will gets the title at Wembley or whatever. And he wanted to dispel that. He's like, we're not fucking doing that yet. That's not where this is going. Swerve is the champion. And that became very clear. And he elevated Swerve. He showed people that he could hang on the level that Will is known for hanging on. And I think it was a great match. And it was a real fucking, you know, had real main event vibes to it, you know, big fight feel.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How were you feeling about it, Chris? I mean, you said, like, it was your number one on the show too, right?
It was number one. It was my number one match of the night. It felt like a main event. It felt like this was a big deal that these two people were fighting. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that people were like, why are you going to have already a champion try to double up and everything? And I just feel like if the international title, because I think, and I think this goes back to Orange Cassidy, if you want to treat your international title like your once what the Intercontinental title was in the WWF, where you hold this title, it basically makes you next in line. They made it because of Orange Cassidy defending it so much. It felt like a workhorse title.
Yeah.
It was the title to give to a person that will put on these wrestling matches in day in and day out.
Yeah.
Like and I understand, and you can go on another tangent and argument about too many titles in wrestling and yada, yada, whatever. We're not gonna, that's a discussion for another day. Uh-huh. You know, your international title, it felt like the person holding this is next in line for something bigger.
Yeah.
Like, whether you're main eventing a show, you're main eventing a Dynamite, you're main eventing a Collision, you're main eventing something,
yeah,
you know, or like you're main eventing a specialty Dynamite, like they just did in Beach Break, mm-hmm. you know, you're on the cusp,
yeah,
you're not in the world title picture, you're on the cusp, and I felt like what Will Ospreay is because of how talented he is and how like. His rise in AEW is warranted.
Yeah.
Them strapping the rocket to him is warranted because you can force people to make him your big baby face. If it's not Swerve right now, it's Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have these two big juggernauts, these two big powerhouses going at it for wrestling. And yes, dispelling the rumors of like, I'm not a placeholder. Swerve is not a placeholder just because I'm the new shiny toy,
yeah.
You know, Swerve's champion. And I think it's going to end up being at, you know, All in the UK, going to end up being Hangman versus Swerve.
Yeah.
And continuing that blood feud, mm-hmm. which is, I think, is going to be a correct move. Mm-hmm. It's that old Stone Cold versus The Rock feud. Like, these two people are just going to fight forever. You know, it's that idea. I feel like, you know, Swerve and everything will go in that route for it. So it just made sense. It felt good to watch the match. It felt good to see all what's going on, even the shenanigans towards the end about the Don Callis family and the screwdriver and Nana, possibly getting stabbed. You know, it felt like it made sense. Everything in that match made sense, even up to leading up to the end. It made sense that Swerve won.
Yeah. Some of the spots were incredible, too.
Oh, it was insane. And I think I think they're going to do the build up like looking ahead. You know, looking ahead of what like the landscape is between like both the companies and like leading up to this wrestling, what do they call it? Like Dynasty or something like that.
The big one that they're doing in Japan.
In Japan, right after. Companies.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I feel like that's where it's gonna, like, you're going to see a big showcase. You're almost going to see like a Forbidden Door, but flipped a little bit.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're going to have like AEW versus AEW. Like, you're going to have some like AEW. Like, I feel like the AEW title will be defended against somebody who is in AEW, but has that like pull into Japan. Like, I can totally see if Kenny Omega is healthy enough, he'd be that person to face off in the event or in some major match. I can see, like, you know, Ospreay or Jay White or somebody like the Japanese audience would be fine with seeing again going into that. And then, like, you'll have your mix-up matches of, like, you know, random people from this and face off against this. But, like, there'll be some kind of build. You know, Ring of Honor is going to be involved. Stardom's going to be involved. Like, I think it's gonna take what Forbidden Door is, and you're just gonna make it bigger because it's at the Tokyo Dome. Yeah. And, like, I'm extremely excited for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. I'm excited for that. It's gonna be one of the first, like, Japan things that I'll watch, probably, like, if not live, as soon as possible.
I think so. And, like, being someone like you were not familiar, like, I'm a little bit, I may not be as familiar with the New Japan product as like Rafe is, but yeah. For example, but like seeing this pay-per-view and seeing some of these Japanese, you know, wrestlers, these New Japan wrestlers, does it make you want to see them more in New Japan, or was it more of a, oh, this is an interesting guest, but I'm not interested, I'm not going to go and try to research them more?
Yeah, I want to watch New Japan. I even had this discussion with my brother earlier. Like, we were like, we need to start watching New Japan because some of these dudes just are awesome, but mm-hmm. man, I just can't find the time.
Oh yeah. It's, yeah. And paying for another streaming network is just obnoxious. And I think that's what the problem is. And I know, like, I want to say, like, the contract of everything with New Japan and airing stuff. Like, I think AEW stuff can be watched on New Japan World now.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I think that's true. Can you watch, Rafe? I'm guessing you have New Japan World. Can you watch AEW stuff on New Japan World? I know for a hot minute they were showing some matches.
I believe you can when you're in Japan. Like, I think you can do like they show matches in there and stuff like that. And I think you can even like click on highlights in Japanese and stuff like that. But yeah, I've got like a fight subscription and I do that. How'd you guys going after me not having a break for 2 minutes? You all good? Everybody's no, still friends?
We were discussing like, and I just kept it going. Because,
yeah, I knew you would. I was like, this will be fine. Said, I don't need to reveal it, but I will because it's funny that I've been.
Yeah. But I kept it. Well, because I asked Alex, so like, you know, like me and you like know more of the New Japan product, maybe sure. You more than me because I don't watch it as active, but I still follow it.
Yeah.
Enough to see what's going on. But I was asking Alex about like, what's his opinion? Like, did this pay-per-view help you gain interest in the New Japan product? Yeah. And he basically said, yeah, I just don't have the time or money because it's another streaming network and it's more sure. time in the middle of a week of so much wrestling right now. And yeah. then we basically talked about how like this wrestling dynasty, what's the big
yeah,
that's show it. Called?
Yeah, I think it's going to be called Dynasty after Wrestle Kingdom, yeah.
I feel like it's going to be like the reverse of a sense of New so, Japan yeah. of Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
That like, yeah, you're going to see an AEW like maybe world title match that's going to be featured somebody that like the Japanese audience would be real crazy and go crazy to see, like Kenny Omega coming back healthy, challenging yeah. for the title or whatnot, being there, or Jay White or Will Ospreay, like. Somebody that they like, they know they're familiar with, and it would be a huge match on a giant stage. But it's going to take what Forbidden Door is and make it 10 times bigger,
yeah,
because it's the Tokyo.
And that was my thought, too. I think it's pretty clear as of this Forbidden Door that it's really not like a co-show anymore. It's an AEW show that features other companies, and
right.
New Japan, as a result, are now going to do their own version of that. So, like, if you kind of like this, but you want to see more of the New Japan talent, that will be the better place to look. So I was also curious, and I'm glad you asked him that question, because I was thinking that. It's like, did this achieve the goal? Did it at least shine the light on the few New Japan guys that were there to make them make you think they would be interesting or want to see more from them? And the fact that that's yes is good. And then, you know,
yeah.
Then it's just some people will be willing to pay for that privilege and others will kind of keep an eye open for when they can next see them on AEW TV. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think all in all, we're all really positive about the show. I think we had a good time with it. I was definitely, you know, I definitely tuned into Dynamite the next week, which is good. And then we're about to head into G1 season, like for New Japan. So it's a kind of a good time to have it, you know, shine a little bit of light their way and then begin what is essentially the road to their WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and like with how like crazy now the New Japan is now, like they're extending a lot of stuff into America with New Japan Strong, making it like a real like secondary like company mm-hmm. that can do a lot more things in the States, but still have that New Japan feel, but then still featured in Japan for all that, or feature more of those, like some of the Gaijin wrestlers that can mm-hmm. be under the New Japan banner.
Yeah.
You know, you got that. And then now with New Japan having Stardom officially under them, mm-hmm. like that's going to feature more stuff. And then with the relationship with like CMLL and then, you know, AEW and everything, like it's going to feel like a bigger deal. And yeah. it's in January of all places, which is
yeah.
just crazy to see like all this massive crossover in the beginning of a year. Feels yeah. like really kicking off your year with like really wild wrestling.
Yeah, it's good. I'm very excited about it. Chris, why don't you tell, or Mighty Peapod, why don't you tell everybody where to find you on social media?
You can find me on all social medias at Peapod Calls, the number 4 and the letter U. I also have a link tree now that, you know, kind of showcases all the work that I do with Ruthless Pro Wrestling, Flophouse Wrestling, and more companies that I've putting underneath my belt. Obviously, you can listen to my interview with Faces of Feels that we just came out a couple of weeks ago and kind of dive in. If this is your first time listening to me and say, why is this guy over talking over everybody? but
he's a professional.
But all in all, you know, you can check me out there and listen to my dulcet tones while people are hitting each other with questionable objects. There you go.
Absolutely. And Alex, sound off on your information, my man.
You can just follow me on Vinyls and Violence on Instagram. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's cool too. I'm Legalized Ranch with 2 H's, which I need to change because it's not funny anymore.
still a little bit funny, to be fair.
Old Eric Andre. Yeah, whatever.
I was about to say, was that an Eric Andre reference?
Yeah, it was really funny when it was relevant. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But yeah, no, that's it. I mean, if you want to add me on Facebook, or not, I don't know why you would want to, but look at my name. I'm no one of importance. So no,
that is untrue. That is untrue. This is great
things coming in the wrestling world, I should say. Whatever.
No, come on. you're the co-host of Anything Goes. We've got more stuff planned for Anything Goes, so stay tuned to that. See what is coming down the pike. I've still got to continue to peer pressure Alex to watch the Despy Invitational. I've spoken enough about it on ISC, but yeah, I would really, really recommend it. And everybody, thanks for tuning in this early Saturday morning show. It was really good hanging out with my two dudes and talking about a fun show. So you know what it is. Rate and subscribe, listen or die. And remember, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Countout Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc., at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the final view.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey. Have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Houston. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.